Jenkins here, and I got 9 o'clock, so we'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. And first order of business is review and approve of the minutes from November. So I guess I should welcome everyone for coming through the snowstorm to get here.
What snowstorm?
I seen about 50 flakes.
Did you? I didn't even see 50. So.
Boy, I'll tell you what, for the news, they can build it up.
Sounds like you got more at the coast than anywhere.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, didn't they?
They had to drive a while to find it.
It was snowing when I left the beach yesterday.
Nice. Which is unusual.
Mm-hmm. I was telling Kevin that when I come to the industrial area there at the port, there was a lady with about that much snow on the top of her car and her hood, so she must have been down towards Plaskanine or come from that direction.
Sounds like. Yeah, but even get that much? You think they got that much?
Yeah, there was that much.
Where at?
Well, I seen it in the industrial. She was going to work this morning, some lady, older lady, and they had 3 inches.
Okay.
I'll move that we accept the minutes as presented.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to adopt the minutes as presented. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same. Okay, we adopted those. Oh boy. Item 2. We need to do election of officers, chair, vice chair, and secretary. We elect Chris to secretary?
Yeah, that's what we're supposed to do.
Huh.
So.
Okay.
Well, are nominations open for chair?
They're open.
Okay, I'll nominate Jerry Kolke. You opened your mouth and you said it, Jerry.
Yeah, railroad's coming.
Yeah. And who was the vice chair before?
I think Bill was vice chair.
I'm vice chair, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
I move Bill for vice chair.
Okay. And then I guess I can nominate Chris as secretary then.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I move nomination be closed.
Okay.
Yeah. You want to cast a unanimous ballot?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'll vote for that. You bet.
All right. So.
Next time.
Yeah. Moving on. No. All those in favor of unanimous ballot, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same. I don't think this thing is being recorded. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for that.
Okay. I'll give a quick update on the position of coordinator. I was serving as the interim coordinator since October. I've been hired as the coordinator, so you'll be seeing more of me after all. Appreciate the opportunity and hope to fill Casey's shoes as best I can, pick up where he left off, and just continue some of the awesome work that Casey was doing before. So, miss him very much, but we carry on. That's really all I wanted to say about that.
Yeah. Welcome, Warden.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, I'll show you guys the 2019 Washington State Noxious Weed List that was adopted by the Noxious Weed Control Board of Washington State. It's got this great picture of Dalmatian toad flax. And
Justin's got coffees. Do you have coffees?
Looks like a big snapdragon.
Yeah. You have an extra one, I can take one.
You can have mine too.
Just got to take this one down.
Yep. So you can see the whole list here. It's got the A weeds, the B weeds that have been designated by the state. Right next to that in your paperclip stacks, you've also got an email from Wendy Descamp. And she actually just breaks down the changes. We have the very last bullet point. Five scientific names got changed. And you might notice a couple of them are things we actually do see. Tansy ragwort used to be Senecio jacobiae, or however you want to pronounce that. Yeah. It's now Jacobiae vulgaris, so the noxious weed list reflects that. We've got a few others.
How come the weed name changed?
You know, scientific names get updated when there's a consensus in the scientific community for what you really should call something. It's important to be calling a species the same thing and the scientific name. So if you agree that this species that you're looking at on the west side of the United States and on the east side is the same species, it should have the same scientific name. And as new species are discovered, then they have to actually be vetted. So there's a big, long process to determine, are you looking at the same species as I am? And then if we decide we are, what should we call it? Well, he already came up with a name, right? And I've got a different name. So now we have to decide what name we actually want. For instance, Japanese knotweed.
Maybe two different weeds tied a knot. Had a name change.
No. You know, it could be
two relatives.
I don't, no. Yeah, it could be. I don't know actually for this particular instance, but I know in the case of Japanese knotweed, that has gone through no less than five scientific name changes. There's a lot of debate going. I think that it's been pretty well settled, but you can see Himalayan knotweed on this list. So usually I think that it's along the lines of what I described earlier, that we thought we had two different things, we had two different names for them, but come to find out really they're the same thing. We need to have one name so that you know common names, you can really call it whatever you want, and a lot of people have nicknames for whatever weed you have, but you want to be precise with
that. Are these scientific names coming from around the world or just the United States?
I believe that they're around the world, actually. Yeah. So the idea is to be not only calling it the same thing in America, but overseas as well.
Because so Japanese, sometimes when I call it Canadian thistle over there or something.
Well, the Canadians get really upset.
New Zealand, they don't know what it was.
Yeah.
What you got right there.
So you can see the importance of the scientific name, because if you called it the scientific name, you couldn't pronounce it, but at least you'd know, you'd both same know page. What you were talking about. Yeah, exactly. So they did that for five species. And the only other change on this big list that really applies to us is two up from there, where the undesignated meadow knapweed in Skamania and Clark counties. So that's a change at the state level. And right next to that paper, you've got another paper in your stack where I broke down to make it very easy. The options that we have, you have as a board, there are optional B and C weeds that we can add by locally designating. So you also have an FAQ that the same employee of the state produced. Wendy did a really great job with this FAQ. It explains a lot of different things as far as adopting a county noxious weed list and the process and how that all works. So we have the option to locally mandate control of all of the weeds that I've listed on this spreadsheet. The 2019 Washington State weed list is kind of where we start from. All of the Class A, obviously, we have to have those. The Class B weeds that are required and designated by the state, just like the undesignated meadow knapweed, for instance, the ones that they've designated, we also have to have designated. But these ones that are not designated on the left, you can see, we have the option to designate those if we want. You can see yellow are the species that you, the board, have designated in the past for locally mandated control. And I'll make a couple of points about ones that have asterisks around their names. Butterfly Bush and Shiny Geranium have both been things that we took a special direction on, not just to simply designate or undesignate or select for control. We had special circumstances. In the past, Butterfly Bush was selected when it was within 100 feet of a natural water course. Otherwise, we didn't care. You know, people have a lot of Butterfly Bush that they've intentionally planted. And with Shiny Geranium, we've had quite a legacy with Shiny Geranium. Most recently, we really only focus on it where it's on pristine habitat, a very important major road or county roads where we can be in charge of taking it out. And really, on the county roads, we haven't made it a priority with just the lack of funding and time that we have. Shiny Geranium has really blown up just in the time that I've been here. First started really noticing it in 2010. Since then, it's gone from an A weed to a B weed, and now it's not designated at the state level. So we have the option to put some emphasis or no emphasis or whatever you want to do there as well. So with that, you now have all the information that I want to present on the Washington state list. Next, we'll have a public hearing so that any member of the public can give testimony.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and open up the public hearing, and if we receive any comment from the public. Hearing no comment from the public, I will go ahead and close the meeting. And we'll move on to board decision for adoption of the 2019 noxious weed list. So now we're open for discussion there. Or questions to Justin?
One of the questions I have, we see the B's and C's, and we're required to do the A's, but there is no A's listed here?
That's right. Yeah, we don't have an option there. So I've really just broken this down to give you guys only the choices that you can make. So you won't see on this list poison hemlock. That's designated by the state, not open for discussion. These B weeds you'll see are not designated. So they're optional. We have the option to do what they call a county select, which means that we as Clark County place emphasis on that to mandate local control. So we would be the entity requiring people to control it.
So your Class B that's listed here isn't, of course, the rest necessarily what's on this sheet here. Are the rest of these more east side weeds we don't see? Is that the reason we don't see such a large number?
A lot of them are east side. You know, Class B really has to do a lot with the designation because of the distribution. So if it's a Class B, it means it's limited throughout Washington State as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll see on the list things like indigo bush. We have it like crazy. It's just nuts in Clark County. But indigo bush seems to like the water. So on the east side, central Washington, they might not have it at all.
Oh. Well, and then, of course, we have the ones here on the previous designated list,
mm-hmm.
the change of names that, you know, it's in Clark and Cowlitz County, but nothing else, so, mm-hmm. okay, gotcha, I gotcha. Mm-hmm.
And Justin, I didn't flip my paper over, I didn't see the A's over here, I was
right.
looking at the help.
Yeah, it does get kind of confusing with the state choosing which things to emphasize and mandate for control, and then the county has the option to do what they call a county select. But it's actually really, really, she does a really good job of clearing up a lot of issues with this FAQ. So if anybody wants to see this and they don't have it in their packet, I can send this over to you.
So one of the questions here, okay, you're more out in the field and seeing, of course, you know, I see a very select number of weeds and stuff versus what you see all the time. You see much more diverse. Is there anything here that you're saying that, you know, from your end, you would just say, it's so far gone, just don't even, you know, worry about it? Is there...
Definitely. I'll just highlight a couple of those. Herb Robert, we see that everywhere. Herb Robert's one of those that I think it's probably a good idea that the state hasn't designated it, just because they might consider it limited distribution for Washington, but in Clark County, you'd never see the end of it if you wanted to.
So don't even worry about...
Don't even worry. I would provide education, but treat it like a Class C where it's widely distributed. You're never going to win that fight. Similarly, lesser celandine and indigo bush, we both have both of those species. We just have so much. Looking down at the legend, you can see the yellow is for recently listed species. I did that to make it easy for you guys. If you wanted to just go with the status quo, that's what you did last year. So
the highlighted ones are...
Mm-hmm, the yellow highlighted ones are what you have done recently, so
okay.
Last year. You might decide to change it up a little bit if you said shiny geranium's too far gone. But for instance, you'll see Scotch broom appears in yellow because that was one of your recent decisions to locally mandate control of Scotch broom. And I would definitely advocate for mandating control of Japanese knotweed, which is not designated by the state. Japanese knotweed is one where we've had the members of the public show up to meetings because they have Japanese knotweed coming through their fence line. So if we had this designated, we would actually have the teeth to enforce that. And I could, you know, bring it before you guys and say, look, we've got this specific compelling example of Japanese knotweed being a real burden to either agriculture, property values, really.
I thought knotweed or Japanese knotweed was quite a problem along the waterways, Salmon Creek and...
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely it is. And we focus on it there, but members of the public really notice it when it's coming through in their garden. So they might see it somewhat when they're out fly fishing on the East Fork, but really we get the most... it's actually very widespread now in upland areas, too. It's actually a lot in Vancouver. Yeah. You'd be surprised. Sometimes you don't notice it because they've pruned it into hedges. But,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah. But common fennel, that's one that I really could go either way on. We don't have it a lot in Clark County, and I've never noticed it spreading quite a lot. We do have maybe four sites where there's an infestation of common fennel. Wild chervil, our office has gone after that for many years, but as far as mandating it for the public, that'd be a real loser to try to do. It's very, very difficult to effectively control wild chervil.
I thought that one was still isolated pretty good and that you were spraying it.
Well, we do our best. Yeah,
right.
We do our best to keep it isolated. Kelly Road, that area, we have a...
319th Street.
Yeah, we have a yearly program where we do spray it and try to keep it at bay. The yellow ones all make sense to me. If you wanted to specify something specific for butterfly bush and shiny geranium, or, you know, not locally mandate those ones either, that could definitely work. I could just tell you as an office, we're not spending a lot of time on butterfly bush or shiny geranium. I mean,
my group does spend time on butterfly bush. Shiny geranium, not as much anymore.
Yeah. I just mean the field inspection side. We don't spend a lot of time. And if we get questions about it at the fair, we'll absolutely provide education. But no, we're not really knocking on doors about butterfly bush.
And oxeye daisy is just that's everywhere, as near as I can tell.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean.
Yep.
Well, and you know, yellow nutsedge. I'm sitting there going, geez, my lower end of my place is full of yellow nutsedge.
Mm-hmm. And the port. It's all low. It's actually like crazy. That's another one where we try to take care of it in our medians. There are a few medians that we have that we're treating it. We have specific products to treat just yellow nutsedge.
Well, I was going
to
say, yeah, what do you use? Because
sedgehammer.
Sledgehammer?
Sedgehammer.
Oh, sedgehammer.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's licensed legal for cropland.
Probably not.
Yeah. I know either Dual or Sandia. Yeah. For you know, yeah. Hmm. Okay.
And
does sedgehammer work good?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it works much better than Roundup. I would.
Well, yeah, Roundup. Yeah, it, yeah, yeah. Roundup.
It's our best thought. Option. But
there's also Q4, which is another product.
Hmm.
Q4 works really well as well, mm-hmm. But it's a 2,4-D product.
Really? Okay.
Hmm. It's still very hard to kill. Those little nut buds.
Mm-hmm.
Super hard to kill. The only other one I would take a moment to point out is the long spine sand burr, class C, kind of fourth from the top right. That's the one that I just located out there by Frenchman's Bar. Like sandy soil, it is widespread in Washington. Long Beach has it like crazy, but
really?
That's the first time we've seen it in Clark County. So, if you wanted to locally mandate control of that, we might be able to have more traction when we talk to people. Say, hey, we just noticed this in your sandy area here. You really do need to take care of it. This is only the second place in our county that we've seen it. Mm. The flip side to that, playing devil's advocate. We might find that everywhere, just because those little spiny seed heads stick like crazy. So we might, now that I know what it looks like, we might be finding that all over the place.
When we were over in the basin, I don't know if it was long spine sandburr, but we had sandburrs everywhere, and the kids had a hard time playing in the yard. Yeah, so anyhow. And, of course, real sandy soil there, so mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Other questions on designated weeds or going with the highlighted again as we did in the past?
So is that what we did in the past, Justin? Was
that's
just,
right.
Just the yellow highlighted stuff?
That's right, yep.
I will so move that we go along with just the highlighted yellow weeds to hit.
I'll second it.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to go with the highlighted noxious weeds that were presented. Any other discussion on that?
I just have a quick question.
Sure.
So there's some that I'm less familiar with in the class Ds.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any that... Okay, so like when I look over at the class Cs, I can think of some that spread via wind
mm-hmm.
really easily, you know, like the Canada thistle, bull
mm-hmm.
thistle.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any in the class Bs that are harder to, like once they get established, they're much harder to keep control of because of wind spread
okay.
versus like keeping them as a spot?
So I can notice a few of these. So Ravenna grass, spurge flax, and I noticed another one. They have very small seeds,
uh-huh.
and so they would be dispersed either by wind or just by tires moving them around. Anything that's that small does tend to move quite a bit. And the shiny geranium also has really small seeds, but I don't think that's really what you're asking about. Mm-hmm. Of this list, you know, there's on the ones that the state's already done, like all the hawk weeds definitely wind dispersed. But
yeah,
no, of this list, those look like big ones that are wind dispersed.
Okay.
And you know, I also have the projector ready to go for the Washington. Noxious Weed Control Board, who has great display, great link. So if you guys do have questions, we can always pull them up and go in detail as well. Just depends on how much time you want to spend on it.
Yeah. I was just trying to figure out whether or not any of these are poised to go widespread versus something that we might be able to control within a localized area. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, with Justin talking about wind spread, is I see you don't have cottonwoods in here.
Right.
They are a real pain in the neck for berry growers. Right. Yeah. But anyhow, yeah. Okay. I don't know, Jerry, did we vote on the on the motion? Okay.
Nope.
All right.
So, yeah, we went into other discussion, so I'll call for the motion then. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same. Okay, we'll adopt the list as presented again.
Can I get special direction on butterfly bush and shiny geranium? Are they locally mandated for control the same as the others? And if so, what emphasis should we place? Should it be the same as last year's and just keep it the status quo?
I think that was the intent of the vote, yeah, okay. With the list. Mm-hmm. They're both listed.
Yeah.
That was my understanding. But
yeah, if you need a motion to clarify it, we can, but hopefully it's, yeah.
Nope. Great, okay, thank you.
Yep. Adjust priorities for 2019, item 7.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of leads right into that. I was going to just describe in brief how 2018 went. I emailed you guys all the report that I put together for the year-end report, and just kind of get some direction as far as the field inspection program. I'll just say in brief, the tansy ragwort season went pretty well. The signs that we actually put out were big red signs along the roadside. Those really did well, got people's attention, and also just noticed that there was less tansy ragwort sprouting, turning yellow, than maybe 2016, you know, which was a banner year.
We have one comment here, though, that they probably, the date on it should be changed. Mm-hmm. I don't even remember how the comment went, but the date by such and such a time, I think that was...
It's too late July. Too late.
It was really affected by the weather, and I would advocate for just... what was actually Casey's parting shot was he said we should just tape over that part. So that it just says control tangy.
He chose your tangy,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
But you saying that you don't see as much, man, I'll tell you what, I was out the other day and I see even more than before. Yeah. I see more rosettes showing up and everything, and don't take my address down. Don't.
Yeah. Yeah, that was actually gonna be my next point, is that those signs, we wanna remove the date. Mm-hmm. And if we're only putting out 50 or 60 or so each year, then that's a pretty manageable job.
You may also consider a color change on the signs themselves. Mm-hmm. I feel like the white lettering, if you will, was hard to see at some point because those signs get bleached out rather quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So, just a thought.
Okay. So you're saying that the red gets bleached out to a lighter color, and then the contrast is just gone.
Mm-hmm.
So if we had black lettering or dark lettering. Okay. Okay. So we noticed that the weed-free forage program, really we did not have as many tons, as many producers. It was just... much less in 2018. We don't actually know why that is. We didn't hear of any common trend. We didn't hear anybody have any complaints or anything like that. So I really plan to just keep a close eye on that and make sure that if there is anything that's contributing to people deciding that they don't want to do the program, or, you know, I think actually for one in particular, I think they just lost their lease on the Steigerwald, that area down there. I think that I've heard kind of rumors of that it just lost the lease. So I just wanted to bring that to your guys' attention, that there is a lot less that happened in 2018. So we'll keep an eye on that for 2019. We changed computer programs. So we now have three or four, where we used to have one. The change has been good for productivity of keeping the data that we enter. They used to just get randomly deleted and lost, and it was very frustrating. But using 3 and 4 programs, it's harder for each field inspector. Certain people, you know, have had more trouble with that. So we're going to keep trying to provide feedback. There's a new version that's coming out just this year, so we'll do our best to keep the reports in the system and be efficient with that. The program that Casey started, where for select Class A noxious weeds, Clark County goes and controls those weeds for the landowner, that program is working really well. I would just say that the ability to sign a hold harmless agreement and then we go onto their property, we're very detail-oriented and we know exactly what we're doing. So we get all of the plants that we can. And when the landowner invites us onto their property, we see things that we never would have seen before. And by targeting a whole stretch along Salmon Creek, we actually were able to find a lot more of the infestation of giant hogweed, which was one of the species that we targeted with this program. I would just advocate for this program that if there's any change that we make over the status quo, that this program is really worthwhile, just for the facts that I listed. We see things we never would have. We're determining the full extent of an infestation, and it's good PR. You know, the county comes onto my land, controls something for me, it doesn't cost me anything. We can keep much better track of it if we're actually going out and looking at it ourselves.
I have one question. Mm-hmm. How is the county budget with concern to that for materials and that?
Personnel?
To turn around and do that program. That, I mean, mm-hmm. Kevin may know what the climate is like on that.
Mm-hmm. So in 2018, it was our first year doing it, and the budget that we had available to us was adequate to cover our three permanent staff, and we hired 2 additional temporary staff to help them. One of those was on for about 9 months, and the other maybe 6 months. Mm-hmm. And that seemed to provide enough support to make sure that that Class A landowner assistance program had enough weight to it. Mm-hmm. And our 2019 budget is it's essentially the same. So I think for this year, we're okay. Council has asked, and the county manager is going this direction, has asked every department to do a deep dive on their budget and look at ways to scrimp and save and cut but where it makes sense, I think. So we're entering that exercise, and I don't have a good feeling yet for what it's going to do to our budget.
Now, you're coming in and taking care of the weeds for no cost to the landowner.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Up to a point. I mean,
I thought you said last year that they would do that 1 year, and after that, then it was up to the landowner to take care of it.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because he can't just sit back, well, take care of it again.
Call them up.
Right.
So they can catch it. Like if you go on to their 1 year or in 2018, you're not going back in 19, but you can go to someone else's property in
That's
19,
right.
a new person, and mm-hmm. say, we'll take care of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, in that way, we can target new stretches of the same water system. We could say, oh, we've discovered it over here. Let's see if it's downriver. You know, makes sense that it might be. And to your point, I think that the price involved, and like Kevin was saying, the price involved of the budget, it's actually a little bit offset because a lot of this Class A select species, so we're not going after every single thing on the list. It's the satellite patches, so we're not going after the heavy infestations and just taking care of hours and hours of work where we really need to have them on the hook. This is specific for early detection rapid response. So it really fulfills a specific niche purpose. Mm-hmm. And the other point I would make is it's not happening in tansy season. So the way that we adjust it is really the emphasis comes earlier in the year. Giant hogweed and garlic mustard, they go to seed earlier in the year than tansy ragwort. So we're able to not really impact the budget as much as impact the timing. You know, we have the same budget. It's just really the amount of time we're spending. And if we spend that time earlier in the year, we're able to get this job done and do fantastic work. I would really actually advocate for taking more pictures, treating this more like a grant project where we have to provide deliverables. We have to, you know, prove where we were, the work that we got done. If we track it better, and we have a portfolio to show, and we say, look, this is what we've been able to do. The public relations, being able to prove for budgetary purposes, that's great. We didn't keep meticulous records in 2018. I want to have a lot of photos and videos of, here's what it looked like before. You know, this person's yard had this Class A weed in it. Here's what it looks like afterward. You know, we're a good steward with private property. I think that this program could really do a world of good for any budget ask in the future. Do we have a request? Here's what we do. You know, this is the type of thing that we can get done. So
your second year, I'm going to look at Leon. It's Leon, right?
Yes.
Is do you take and have people like Leon that you kind of put the name out that, hey, he can help you in the future? And okay, good.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Yeah, we have the county mower sprayer list where it's already established. You know, his name's on the list, but we would just provide that list and we would say
and then say, okay, gotcha.
When you send an infraction out, do you send that list out with it?
Yeah, we do send that list out, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if those people want to call Leon, they can.
That's right. Yep. Hmm.
And Justin, correct me if I'm wrong, but every Class A noxious weed species that we found last year gets a letter at the beginning of the season. Are we still doing that?
That is something that we did in 2018. Yeah. I think that was really worthwhile.
So. Just say, hey, we were out there, we saw this last year, we, you know, the nature of weed species, it's going to be there this year. Now's the time to jump on it. And another couple of things that I would say about the Class A landowner assistance program is, since we're not going back to the same properties year after year with that program, the program doesn't grow. It stays it stays the same, and we can move it around the county or at priorities as we need to. And then the other thing is, if you look at the time that somebody spends, like Justin spends on with one landowner who goes to enforcement, how many times he has to visit the property, how many times we interact with that property owner, how many letters we send them, they come in here for a hearing. We're still dealing with one of those landowners from last year. And so if you can attack it at the source that first time, it's a much better use of resources. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in that way, you could almost advocate for going back to a property maybe a couple of years in a row to make sure that we get good control on something. We're not advocating for that yet, but I think you could easily make the case.
Well, and hopefully when it comes before the county councilors, hopefully that argument can be made, and hopefully we can make it so they understand that this is the value of that thing.
Yeah.
Yes, I know they're always, you know, very reluctant to have you ever do anything for any county, you know, taxpayer or anything and stuff. But in many ways, like you say, Tyler or Kevin, you'd be on there so many times, you'd spend so many hours trying to do that and stuff. So I have another question along this line, but it's I have a landowner next to me that I am having a real difficult time with. Doesn't take care of property. He's just right along my fence line. It's at the back of his place, and it's about from here to the wall over there, a stretch of Canadian thistle and tansy that is just thick. Do I dare to take and spray across the fence and kill it for him?
Wow.
Well, but you can't see it from the road. It's a quarter mile away from the road.
But he can inspect your place.
Yeah. I know. He'll find all the things I've got.
So a couple of things. So a couple of things. We tell everybody, and yourself included, chemical trespass is a real thing.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
And you don't want to face those consequences. So by far and away, the better thing to do is to contact us. If somebody calls us out to their property and says, hey, please, you know, come tell me if I have anything that really, you know, is a bad, you know, is a bad deal. I have some things that I don't know. I just moved here from California or whatever the case may be. We're not going to go to enforcement on somebody who called us out to their property. That's not only a contract.
Can Bill call you out onto his property and look across the fence?
And so I was getting to that part. If he calls us out specifically for the purpose of looking across the fence, that's fine. But what I just said still applies. We're not going to go against
Bill. Oh, this guy would just absolutely go ballistic if I did.
And so
he's been ballistic on us enough. He went ballistic when we spread lime. And I said, it's all natural. It's all organic. And he says, nothing can be that good when you put that much on. And everything. So anyhow, he doesn't control a single thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, anyhow, okay.
So you will face that problem for sure. We run into that where people are not happy when their neighbors tell on them, but really that is the spirit of the law. You know, the Class A program is also the spirit of the law. We want to find the early detection parts and have a rapid response so that the Class A's get controlled. And your neighbor impacting what you have to do, that's also the spirit of the law. Each person is responsible for their property, so... You know, it's like you said, he's going to be mad at you either way, so you might as well get something done, right?
Mm-hmm. I had one out that I turned in last year, and they don't live there. Mm-hmm. So you guys come out, well, we can't go on the property, so it never did get taken care of.
That's another problem that I'm keen on solving. If you read the law, it actually provides for providing reasonable notice and then entering the property. We've checked with our prosecuting attorney for Clark County, and he affirmed that, yeah, we can provide a reasonable notice, enter the property. And that's really the only way I could see to do a lot of our job. Public roads don't go into everybody's backyards, so we don't have the ability to see a lot of the issues. And to your point, if you weren't willing, then we would have no way. Short of buying a lot of drones and peering over people's fences and having a nightmare, you know, that would be a nightmare. We can't do our job there. So when we know something exists or we have reasonable suspicion, according to the law, we should be able to provide them reasonable notice.
And they haven't been around for like 4 months now, and she hasn't been around for over a year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we can definitely address. Mm-hmm. Should we make it our policy to provide a notice to somebody who we have really strong suspicion, or we know from the past they have a seed bank there? It's been there every year for the last, you know, it's been there for a decade. We can't see it now because they put up a nice big fence. Should we mail them a notice and then show up at the date we said? You know, very official, not sneaking or anything like that, but. Is that something we want to do?
But nobody ever picks that mail up, so...
Not our problem, though, right?
That's not
we provided
problem.
A reasonable notice, so...
So what does the prosecuting attorney say is a reasonable notice? 2 weeks or something or other?
I would imagine it's the same reasonable notice we give for warning letters and violations. You send a certified letter, and then that's really the best you can do. I don't know of any... Unless you want to have a process server or somebody track them down,
right.
You could get very reasonable... for unreasonable prices, but I think it would just be up to you guys. If you said, you know, certified letter is good enough, then I think discretion would be the key word, knowing when really makes sense to, you know, put somebody in your sights and say, yeah, they have this, we know for a fact, we're going to serve them this notice and then go on to their property. We really wouldn't want to do that unless we were sure.
Yeah. You get patches like Bill's talking about. That's what I'm talking about. And the wind just blows that stuff everywhere. Mm-hmm. You're over here fighting it all the time.
Well, you can see it across my place, just, yeah, where it comes through. And,
yeah.
And it just keeps moving across, yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Okay. So do you want a motion for that or anything, Justin? Or do you just want it, just the boards?
I would say that we're going to want to... have some sort of ratification for all of our priorities, is where I'm at right now, mm-hmm. right down there on adjust priorities. We want to know that we have the board's approval for the Class A program, where we target stretches and we mail it out to everybody in that stretch, and we say, hey, please invite us onto your property, we'll do this for free, and then, you know, next year it's on you, right? And we keep going in places where we think, hey, we keep seeing hogweed wash down from somewhere, so it must be up in here. That type of thing worked great, but I'd like kind of direction on that program, if we can slightly increase that, keep it the same, or however you guys see fit. And then also this idea about doing our jobs to the fullest extent we can. If we want to mail somebody a notice, have them receive the notice and say, oh, they're coming. And unless I want to fight that or do something else, then they will survey and they will take a look to see if there's the weeds there. We would be able to actually find the evidence that we need, take pictures, and show somebody, you know, this is what we're talking about. Whereas before, a fence stops us, you know.
Uh-huh. So as far as priorities from the past, we're not really changing anything. You have that priority now, if I understand it right.
The Class A?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. All in place.
Yeah, if we had status quo, we would spend about the same amount of time as we did last year. I could, you know, this time around, taking my experience from our grant projects and how we take the pictures and have right. kind of a photo point where you set the camera in a certain spot, so you have all the background exactly the same. You can see a real good contrast between before and after. I think that'd be fantastic, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as far as these specialty sites
mm-hmm.
that you send a letter out to,
mm-hmm.
what you need, you have that now, don't you?
So we can do that now, but we've never had anybody confirm, let's do that, let's make that a priority. What we've always done is we've waited until Bill says to us, hey, come out to my property, you got to see my neighbors.
Okay.
So that's all we've done before. Now, if I know that 2 years ago Bill's neighbor had a big problem, but Bill's no longer at his property, he moved away, I can go and talk to the new landowner at Bill's place and say, hey, you got to let me look at your neighbor, but they're not home. It's a, you know, investment property or something. So what I'm saying is, I know that Bill's neighbor's got a bad infestation or a Class A. What I want to be able to do is mail Bill's neighbor a letter certified that says, hey, you've had this in the past, I have a request, I'm, you know, going to come onto your property as per this law, and then we show up. We say, we're looking for this in this spot, this is the species, just like you would have to provide for, you know, any other warrant. So there are certain circumstances where I think that it merits it, and obviously, like I said, it'd be discretionary. We wouldn't want to do that a lot, but to really fulfill the spirit of the law, I think that's pretty necessary. We've never done that before. We've never said,
okay.
I mean, with one exception, for the knotweed grant, we did do a blanket letter that said, hey, we're going to be floating down the water. We're going to be coming. We're going to be looking. And we had some people call and say, no, you're not. Don't come on my property. And all we could do was, you know, float down the water. We couldn't put a foot on their land because we honored that, right?
Right.
So it'd be a similar thing. Instead of saying we're coming and we're going to float down the water, we would say we're coming based on RCW 1710, where it says we can. Here's your reasonable notice. We're looking for this in this location. If you want to be there when we're there, hey, we'll work with you. You know, that type of thing.
You can't step on the land up to high water mark?
You can, but that's a sticky issue, right? So if I step on the land and you know, say it's not the high water mark and this and that, really we just played it safe. And yeah. That's what we've been doing for a lot of these issues. Playing it safe, not really, you know, fulfilling the spirit of the law. But I think that in certain circumstances, it's worth it. We would be able to really control some of these. Like your example. Yeah, exactly like your example.
So if you... We're probably not prepared to change that, but if you wrote up
mm-hmm.
that proposal or that priority for us,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
what you would need for those Class A's or whatever, and brought that to us on the next meeting, we'd still have time
mm-hmm.
for things.
Yeah, the next meeting is May 6th.
Yeah.
A lot of the things that I can think of, I mean, it would definitely be in effect for next year, but
right.
for this year, there would still be things after May 6th for sure that we could
Absolutely.
Still have time to mail it out to them, you know, right. call them up, do whatever we need to do to get, you know, them reasonable notice, and we could have a procedure in place
yeah.
that
right.
would actually outline what we do every time, make it completely fair. Yeah.
Right.
And have to run them by the prosecuting attorney.
Absolutely. I was just going to say that. We would be working hand-in-hand with
That's
the
right.
prosecuting
and
attorney.
And like I said before, Casey actually has already put feelers out, talked to the prosecuting attorney, said, hey, look at the law, says this. Can we do this, or would Clark County balk at this? And the prosecuting attorney, you know, said, yeah, well, you can do that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So those would be very limited anyway, I would
That's
think.
Right, yeah.
So,
that's right.
Okay. Well, we'll look for you to bring something to us at the next meeting and have it checked out with.
Mm-hmm.
And we have done an equivalent to that for control in the past where
That's right.
we give reasonable notice and then we obtain a warrant
mm-hmm. yeah.
from the sheriff's office and go onto the property and control the weed and then bill the landowner for that work.
Right.
So
this is just a little bit different.
It's a little bit different, right?
In that case, we have photographic proof. We're able to see it. We're able to take pictures. We have a very sound case in that instance. In the instance that I'm describing, you know, I have my discretion. I know it's going to be there. You know, I've got somebody who's a neighbor who says, yeah, it's still there, you know. And right. if he lies, he's on the hook, right?
Yeah.
So in the times where it's discretionary, I can't see it now because they've put up a, you know, obstruction right. or something. Hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So we'll look for that for the next meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But as far as the Class A assisting landowners, should we just keep it the status quo as we did last year, about the same amount of time?
Yes.
Yep.
I think
good.
We're all in agreement.
Yep.
If you
yeah.
need a motion, we can do that, but anyhow.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Consensus agreement, we'll make it that way.
Yeah.
Okay. On item number 8, I've got to leave here in about 5 minutes.
Okay.
But if we got started on it, at least I would have been present.
Mm-hmm.
I've already been through it as an elected official.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't, one of the questions I had, because this is not an elected board, why do you have to have the open public meeting?
That's actually in the presentation. I can get to it right away if you want.
Okay, let's get to that right
All right,
away.
Great.
That way then.
Okay.
And Lee, you're probably good since you're a city council member and you go through the training. It's the same training.
Yeah.
That's
you do it? But at least I'm here in
yeah.
your minutes.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
annually, but if you did it
mm-hmm.
in a year, then I'm good. So this will be boring and review for all of you, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we'll go through it pretty quick then.
Yeah. Just keep your finger on the go button.
Yeah. Fast forward.
Yes. Yeah. There you go.
Eliminate the commercials.
Yep.
What's your standard county login?
Somebody.
Oh, can you go back to the switch user?
Yeah. Let's see. Administrative?
No.
No.
Other credentials doesn't apply.
Might just restart it.
Need an 8-year-old.
Yeah.
Well, Kevin, what did you think of the meeting the other night with the on the Heritage Farm?
Good turnout.
Mm-hmm. A lot better than all of us on the advisory board were kind of going, wow, we thought maybe we'd see 25 or so. And,
yeah.
And
geez, yeah, yeah, we were surprised too. It was really good turnout, lots of good ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Really good engagement with everybody that did come.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, lots of information for us now to kind of boil down and see what the true priorities are that people think are important out there. And then I think we come back to the farm advisory team at the end of the month with hopefully some results for you to look at.
Did you guys do a survey?
There's a survey, and then there were some activities at the open house where people could kind of say, yeah, this is important, no, this is not a good idea, you know, that kind of thing.
What do they call that, a dot survey or something? What do they call it? Anyhow,
starting to find out about grants
or not yet.
Not yet.
Anything.
No, wow.
No. I have a feeling they're just gonna come like all at once.
Yeah.
Well, Justin, I hear you found a real jewel of a combine, huh?
Might have.
Yeah.
Size wise.
Oh yeah, yeah. Size wise just about perfect for you.
Yeah.
So how'd you enjoy Victor Blomquist?
It was a good, we had a good one, yeah.
That was the time he complained about his neighbor to me, and there were several of us, I think, that, and you know, with weed problems. And it was like, my gosh, Victor, we've been 45 minutes, we've been through this thing three times now. Look, let's get on with it.
Yeah.
Victor Blomquist?
Yeah. You had dealings with him probably when you were at Senex.
Yep.
He's quite a character.
It was a little ranting. Yeah. We didn't go too far.
Yeah.
It looks like he wants to donate it too, so.
That'd be good.
That's good.
Yeah.
Because we don't have much money to restore it anyway.
Is it in bad shape or what?
No, it's not necessarily in bad shape. It's just been sitting there for a long time. And
inside a barn?
It's old. And
it's been inside a barn.
It needs a lot of cleanup. And
it must be it's probably been sitting there for going on 30 years.
A lot of TLC.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know how long it's been sitting there for.
Well, he's had his 95 for a long time, and so he hasn't used that 45 that I knew of for, you know, forever.
Yeah.
The bad thing is, did he open the trap doors up and on the elevators? Did you notice?
I checked for rust on all the spots where things would sit, water would collect, but I didn't see any rust.
Well, what I was worried about is mice and rats, and you have the rubber paddles on the elevators, and some guys won't open them up and dump it out.
Yep.
And the next thing you know is the mice chew holes in it all the way up, and you're going, paddles have to be replaced.
Is it self-propelled or a pull tank?
Self-propelled, yeah. Little 45.
Huh?
Little John Deere 45.
Okay. Probably like 1962, I would guess.
No, probably middle 50s, early 50s, yeah. It's a round back, so, and flat belt.
It's
so,
a round back, yeah.
Yeah, so it's, you know, I can't remember when they went to the square back, but anyhow, yeah, so you're...
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a 10-foot header on it, which is about the right size we need.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I think I might run out of hay.
You're going to run out of hay?
I might. It's going to be close.
I might have some extra. I don't know.
Now, if the boy keeps all those calves, I'm going to have to put more in. He's talking about selling them at 6 months. I don't know if he can make anything.
So it applies to any multi-member board.
Might as well keep them a butchering.
Council, committee, subcommittee, or policy, or rulemaking board, or body of a public agency. That way, you guys are included.
Gotcha.
Okay. So, 2014 legislature passed the Open Government Training Act. New law requires every member of the governing body, public agency, must complete the Open Public Meetings Act training within 90 days of appointment. I think, you guys were reappointed.
Yep.
Anyway, all right. So the meetings need to be open to the public, and all persons shall be permitted to attend. So there's no conditions on attendance. You can't require a sign-in. You can establish rules of conduct for meetings. You can remove disruptive persons only if the meeting cannot continue with those persons present. The commissions are public agencies. So this presentation is borrowed from somebody else. That's why they're talking about commissions. The WSDA just uses this also for week orders. So the definition of meeting is when there's any action, including discussion, deliberation, or evaluation that may lead to a final decision, whether or not final action is taken. So individual review of materials, information in advance of a meeting is allowed, but not discussion, deliberation, or evaluation as a group. So this applies to emails as well, and we'll get into that. If I send out the materials for you guys to review before, then that's fine, but we won't be able to have a discussion about that. Really,
Justin, can't you have an individual discussion? We just can't have a group discussion.
You can't have a
so
quorum.
So it has to be less than a it has to be less than a quorum.
Right.
Yeah. So we'll get to that too. But I just wanted to highlight that from here.
Sure.
Just any deliberation, any evaluation, whether or not final action is taken. So that's covered under it. That would be considered a meeting. So, meetings at which action is taken, that's subject to the OPMA, also where there's a quorum, or meetings of any committee of the board when the committee acts on behalf of the board. We don't usually make up subcommittees to go research things, so So the quorum is when there's a majority of the voting members of the board. Participation by a board member can be in person, by phone, or teleconference. So, I guess if all you guys got on the phone together and started talking business, then that would be considered a meeting. So, we want to make sure that we don't actually run afoul of that part. So, action. The definition is public testimony, deliberations, discussions, reviews, evaluations, and final action. And a final action is a decision or vote by the board or a committee acting on behalf of the board. Final action has to be taken in a public meeting. So most decisions have to be made in an open session. So here you go. Emails are sometimes exchanged ahead of a meeting, and the answer of if that is considered to be a meeting depends. If there's a quorum of the board that participates in the email, if the agenda items are discussed, if members intend to transact official business with those emails, if the members communicate about issues that may come before the board for a vote. So you have a best practice down here. Received by email and discussed at the meeting. So what about polling? Can board members meet informally or by telephone or email to be polled on a particular issue prior to board meeting without violating those requirements? Answer is no. So social functions. If the board members attend social function, is that a violation? It's okay unless you are transacting official business at the function. You can't talk shop. All right. Let's see. Training sessions, building exercises. That subject, it depends on what occurs during those sessions, regardless of how it might be titled. It's a question of if the board takes action. So we have a gathering. Should it be open or closed? If it's strategic planning, it must be done in an open meeting. The board deliberates, discusses, and makes decisions. The sessions must be open to the public, especially to those who pay assessments on the program. If it's considered team building, like how to work with coworkers, communication styles, these are probably not subject to the Open Public Meeting Act. But there's no downside to opening the session to the public. So the key is whether the board is taking action. And the votes must be taken in an open meeting. Secret ballots are not allowed. And there's a section in the law about no secret votes. Can board members vote by proxy? No. subcommittees. We don't generally do that, but the subcommittee can make decisions or act on behalf of the board. In that case, they have to have open public meetings. Subcommittees are not subject to the Open Public Meeting Act if it's composed of less than a quorum of board members, the subcommittee is only making recommendations, or if they discuss the issue in any open public meeting. So public notice must be given in advance, and if the meeting is by phone or video conference, the instructions have to be provided to the public. Meetings may be regular meetings or special meetings, and the requirements differ for each type of meeting. Regular meetings are held according to a predetermined schedule. Date, time, and place for regular meetings must be filed annually with the code revisor for publication in the state register. So set the following year's meeting schedule at the last meeting of each year. And changes for regular meetings may not be made unless 20 days notice is given by publication in the state register. That's the change in the date, time, or location. 20 days notice cannot be given. The meeting will be considered a special meeting. The agenda requirements state that if you have more than 10 employees in an agency, you need to post agendas for regular meetings on the agency website 24 hours before the meeting. And let's talk about commissions. Okay, our board's required to meetings in a specific location? No. You can have meetings in your location within Washington State. Is public participation at meetings required? Does the public have to be given the chance to respond to each agenda item? No. Best practice is to provide public an opportunity to participate, but it can be like we do at the end, public comment. If the board is reviewing documents, do additional copies need to be made for the audience? Answer is no. It's not required, but it is recommended if it doesn't create a burden. So at a minimum, the attendee should be provided with a copy of the agenda. Are members of the public allowed to videotape or record the meetings? Well, that's not specifically covered by the Open Public Meeting Act. But there's general agreement that recording is permitted so long as it does not interfere with orderly conduct of the meeting. So special meetings, they can be called within 24-hour notice. The schedule and agenda must be provided to each board member by mail, fax, or email, and needs to be delivered to any local newspaper, radio, or TV station. That's requested notification. Needs to be posted on the agency's website and needs to be displayed at the agency's main location and at the meeting site. At a special meeting, you are limited to take only action on those items that are listed on the agenda for the meeting. And by contrast, at a regular meeting, the board can take action on any matter. So executive sessions. If you're doing an executive session, the public may be excluded. The purpose of an executive session and the time it will end must be announced by the presiding officer in an open meeting. The board may hold an executive session only for purposes listed in the Open Public Meeting Act. Any final action is generally taken in open session. Okay. So executive sessions may be held to discuss selection, acquisition, sale, or lease of real estate, review performance on a publicly bid contract only if public review would increase costs. Review of bids, contracts, and contract performance generally should be held in open session. Executive session may be held to receive or evaluate complaints against board members or state employees, or to discuss issues related to public employment. For state employees only, including hiring, firing, and performance review. And salaries and conditions of employment must be discussed in open session if they would be applicable to all commission employees. Executive session may be held to discuss litigation or potential litigation, but it must be with legal counsel only when the public, only when public knowledge regarding the decision is likely to result in an adverse legal or financial consequence to the agency. It says, just because legal counsel is present doesn't mean it can be considered an executive session. So what is potential litigation? Potential litigation means legal action which has been specifically threatened against the commission or a board member. Legal action that the commission reasonably believes may be commenced, or legal risk of proposed action or current practice when public discussion is likely to result in adverse legal or financial consequences. Okay, so that law requires that minutes be taken for all regular and special meetings and made available for public inspection. There's no specific format or content that's required. The minute should, at a minimum, document the actions of the board with sufficient detail to record discussions and decisions. Minutes of executive sessions are not required, not recommended. These minutes are not designated as confidential, so they could reveal the discussions in the executive session. So the penalty for violating the Open Public Meeting Act, the Superior Court can impose a $100 civil penalty against each board member. It's a civil violation, it's not considered a crime. A judge may award costs and attorney fee to a party successfully challenging for compliance. Action taken in violation of the Open Public Meeting Act can be declared null and void. So if you made a decision, then it could be reversed. There could be negative publicity that could affect the commission's reputation. So as a board member, it is your responsibility to help ensure the public have ample opportunity to participate in your board meetings. And you represent your constituent, growers or handler. You represent the public of Clark County. They rely on you to make decisions on their behalf. Make sure they know their assessment dollars or just general taxes are being spent to benefit them. Okay, so there's some links for resources. So we do have a training certificate that you can each complete. And there's a person who handles Department of Ag's. Questions?
Justin, you know, we set up an extra special meeting in, what was it, August or something, rather, to deal with complaints. If we cancel that meeting, because we don't, you know, we said we would set it up just because in case we needed it. Mm-hmm. If we cancel the meeting, is there any requirements that we notify people 24 hours in advance or anything? Or
I'm not sure if that'd be covered under changing the date and time, or if it's just different because it's canceling. If you call the special meeting, then
right,
the requirements are different. And for a special meeting, you could still discuss all the things on your agenda that you wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not specifically covered in this. Might be a good idea to look and see cancellations of meetings if that's covered under the act.
Mm-hmm.
So sorry, I don't have a more definite answer. Doesn't seem like it's covered in what we.
That was the only thing I saw on it that I wondered about. Yeah. Okay.
Just for discussion, where we have a board of 5, 3 would be a quorum. Mm-hmm. Right now, we have a board of 4. Is 2 a quorum, or is that a tie?
I think we're still talking about.
Just curious.
All of the seats, right? So it would still need to be
3
majority of the seats. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which I think is why they set it up as 5 and not, right, you know, an even number.
So it's 5 or 7.
Yeah.
Or 3.
Yeah. More difficult. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Cool. Okay.
All right, so I've got certificates for you guys.
You have all hand done and everything for us. So.
Yeah.
Oh.
If you want to just put your name on the top of them there, then we can go through and sign them.
And then I need to sign it down below, right?
What does it say at the bottom?
Signature and position or title. I received this training, yes. So
yeah.
Must be then, okay.
That's right, yeah. So yeah, print your name at the top and then sign at the bottom.
From the board?
I had one question. A couple of years back when Don Benton was overseeing the whole thing, I brought up the question of asking about the people that have property that's in open space taxation that are not complying with the deal, you know, the noxious weed and one thing another. Did anything ever come of that? Do we have any teeth to it at all that they can say is if you don't comply, you stand the opportunity or stand the chance of losing your open space taxation?
I don't actually remember seeing any final action on any of that to be able to forge that sort of connection internally. I know that it's part of their agreement.
Mm-hmm. Their agreement for the open space or the...
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
For your lower taxes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
For the tax deferral.
I had to prove it last year, but I had to prove that I had income.
Oh, right. The income is one thing, but yeah.
I've never seen anything on controlled weeds.
So our forester, Hunter, does the reviews for open space, current use open space. And he also provides technical assistance to the assessor's office for designated forest land. And so he has been emphasizing that as a condition of approval for getting into the program.
Hmm.
But once they're in the program, it's up to the assessor's office to do any auditing.
Hmm.
And I know that they've been focusing a lot of their time and effort on just the current use agriculture as the primary program that they're auditing. They haven't started auditing really anything else.
And that's just strictly the financial end of things to prove that we have income.
I believe that they want to start looking at some of these other programs to make sure that they're being audited. We'd have to have a conversation with them about noxious. Mm-hmm. If we had a real problem with some of the property owners that are in the program that aren't meeting their obligations year over year, and we provide them with that evidence, that would be
so. Some of these people that are in violation, are they threatened if they have open space? Are they threatened to take off of that program?
I think that's the question. We don't have the authority to tell them that they could get removed from the program. It would be up to the assessor.
The assessor would have to do
it. They would have to do it, but we could provide them with the documentation and say that we recommend that you do that.
But do we?
But we don't.
We haven't done that.
We have not done that, yeah. We rely on our own enforcement process as sort of the sole method to get control.
Now, I thought somebody mentioned there was still one being talked about from last year?
That's right. Yeah, there's a lien that's still in process.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
On one of the violators.
Yes. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yes. So we sent them a notice of civil infraction and a $750 or I don't remember the amount. They didn't pay it. And so in the law, it says the next step is to lien their property. So we
for the amount of that violation. So we've sent them a notice of intent to lien.
Yep.
And so our next step is to actually record the lien against the property. Mm-hmm. And if that doesn't get their attention, then the next step is to convert that lien to delinquent tax. Mm-hmm. And then the money would become due the next time they get their taxes.
I got you.
We've only gone that far with one property previous to this. It's a lot of steps to get there. And usually we had pretty good track record with everybody else this year.
Right.
The people that did come in for hearings, you know, we came to a resolution with them, and there was at least one other person that just paid their notice of civil infraction. Mm-hmm. So
I didn't know if it, I know I had a case one time where we had to put a lien on a piece of property, and it stayed there, and it collected 9% interest for the life of the lien, which ended up being, I want to say it was 8 years or something or other, and they wanted to eliminate it, to sell the property. And,
yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, that was pretty nice to collect 9% interest, you know. Jeez, yeah. So, anyhow, yeah. So, I didn't know if you left it there and stuff, but it comes in as a
tax.
So when they come in and pay their taxes, it comes in as part of that.
Yeah, eventually, okay. Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. The other question I have is, Kevin, you and I talked at the meeting there at the Heritage Farm meeting, Trent's position. Anything?
Yeah, so...
were we going to discuss that?
Justin, were you going to talk about that today? Kent Wright's vacant position?
That's right, yeah. If you look at the very back of your stack of papers, you'll notice that I've put a big red number 2. That's the second district or boundaries. So district 2, yeah, that's been vacant for a while. And if you know anybody who lives within those boundaries, and in this case, they must produce agriculture. They must be a primary producer.
Oh, they're not just a landowner, but they have to be
Right. Yep.
Have to be what?
They have to produce primary
agricultural crop. Then.
Yeah.
A crop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
So we're looking for recruiting for that.
Okay.
That board spot, yeah.
So you got Camus, Warshugel,
that's
Prairie.
Right.
Prairie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's right.
South of Hawkinson. Mm-hmm. A lot of urban area.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
So I think our intent will be to put out a notice to do some outreach. But if you guys know of anybody out in that area that maybe they're not interested, but we could at least talk to them.
We got a farm and forestry meeting coming up the end of the month. That would be a good spot to make an announcement to somebody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How soon do you want to try and fill the position? What kind of timeline are you looking?
I think it makes sense to fill it as soon as we can. If we can get everything ready by the May meeting,
okay.
Then that's, I think, our logical next step. We've got the next meeting is May the 6th.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We've got a Farm Bureau, or should have a Farm Bureau meeting, so same way. We could probably have a deal, yeah.
Bring it up to them.
Yeah. I'm trying to think who's down that way.
Reisters.
Huh?
Reisters.
Yeah. That, well, in fact, Trent, Kevin, I'm sorry, geez.
No,
anyhow. Kevin and I were talking, and I mentioned Jake Reister, but I said, geez, you know, he's pretty, you know, he's so busy with his sheep operation
and
stuff. I just, so
or even if there's he knows a couple anybody, of, I was thinking,
huh?
Even if he knows anybody,
yeah,
else
yeah.
That
now you said you got to produce a product,
yeah,
right.
Timber is not a product. I've argued back and forth with him.
I know.
I wonder why
it's
not.
It's the largest department of agriculture the United States has ever had.
Yep.
And it's not a product.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. We could get an opinion from Washington State Department of Agriculture. And I mean,
because the county doesn't see it that way either.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Because when they came out with this deal of checking to make sure you're making money, I asked about timber, and they said that won't fly.
Doesn't fly. Really?
You got to have beef or chickens, pigs, or something.
Yeah, because they want, they want you to be in the timberlands program or the designated forest lands program with those acreages.
Yes, because they came out and blocked ours all off, excluded all timber ground.
Yeah.
Forest Services, Department of Agriculture.
I mean, it's a piece of it right there.
And Christmas trees, I think, count as agriculture, don't they?
I'm not sure on Christmas trees.
I think it does because it's a short-term enough crop that is considered a crop then.
It could,
But, okay.
I was going to say, I think that in the past we've specifically solicited people who
were tree farmers.
So
we may have to clarify that for sure, but I know the forestry part is excluded. Yeah, same thing.
So there's a couple of Christmas tree farmers out in the Washougal area.
Yeah. There's vineyards.
Farrell Farms.
Maybe a
vineyards, too.
Okay. Any other
poison producers?
Yes.
Okay. Public comment or anything? No, go ahead.
Well, I have a little comment I'd like to make. I was here last time, and I just want to thank you for allowing me to come to your meeting. Just a little bit about myself. I'm new to the area. I just come here from Colorado, which has a commercial applicator there, and I'm a commercial applicator here. So I've been here just a short time, about a year and a half, and when I was in Colorado, I worked for I'm an independent contractor, but I did work for a lot of work for my city. And what I would do is that the compliance officer and also the resident, I would kind of work in between the two. They would get a notice of that it needed to be taken care of. Their weeds need to be taken care of. And then since a lot of people knew me in the area, they would call me, and then I would do the application, take care of the weeds. I would also interact kind of a buffer between the enforcing board and the residents, and I would give them alternatives so far as how to be in compliance. Some people don't like to have the actual herbicide, any kind of chemical, and I would give them their other alternatives. They can mow, they can spray, they can have animals, they can dig, they can ever have, but to eradicate the noxious weed that was targeted. And then there would be a time of that they would have to do that. So I guess my question to the board here would be, as a independent contractor, is it the board's feeling here as well that those other methods can also be used for compliance so far as the weed spraying, the mowing, to dig up weeds, to have animals to be in compliance, and then there's a time. So, because as I go to people and talk to them, I could tell them what your response would be.
Mm-hmm. Well, allow mowing.
We allow mowing. We allow them to dig it.
Spray it.
Yeah, you bet. Yeah, anything that gets it from going to seed. And
One time we had opportunities to get bugs from the county, and I don't think they do that anymore, do they?
That's right. Well, we still do. Yeah, we still are involved in that program. The one that we don't do is tansy. The state doesn't collect those bugs anymore. But but there still is an active program, and there's been a shift in the target of what bugs they're collecting and we're distributing. So last year we did a few releases, maybe three or four.
At one time I heard they were going to get a bug for the Canadian thistle, and then I never heard no more.
Well, I'd be remiss if I let it go without saying that for Class A species, we actually require eradication. If you mow a Class A and it still has the roots there, that's not complying right. with the letter of the law. So in that case, you could dig it up, you could spray it, but you need to kill the roots for Class A.
For Class A. Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons I'm asking that is that I've been given the opportunity through Wilco, the manager really likes me, and so she wants me to give a talk. And so my idea is to, later on, I'd like to get maybe your noxious weed list and to give it out to the residents there and to talk about some things and any information that the board could give me to give to the people that come there, because she's going to make an announcement. And for me, it's a great opportunity because I get to talk a little bit about, you know, and then I get name recognition, but and it also helps the Wilco to, I'm going to tell them about their product and about the chemical composition and do a lot of things for them. But, and also, I can also mention something about the county is also willing to, on Class A weeds, you know, I can, so I'd like to get some information about that on a one-time, you know, so I could kind of, so my desire would be to come side by side with the board and work, you know, with the board to learn from the board about what the needs are in the county, and then that way, as a commercial private applicator, I can also educate and talk to, and that's what I really love to do. I love to talk to people to, you know, and inform them about the needs and stuff. And a lot of times, people are more compliant to do a lot of the things that you're wanting to do when they are sitting and realize a lot of people don't really know how bad the noxious weeds are. And when I come alongside them and tell them and say, look, this is what the problem is, and then talk to them about some of the different ways. I've had a lot of really good luck because in that, and I've dealt with people that when they're dealing with the law versus the compliance and everything, and to work together with them. So anyway, I just wanted to introduce myself to you and just to say it's nice to be with you. I'd be happy to give out any of you my card if you would like to have one and everything. And I just want to work with you and to learn more about really the need. The need is different here than it is in Colorado. There's a different... There's some of the weeds that are the same, but there's a lot of weeds that are different. So my desire for being here is to learn more what the real problem is so I can prepare myself, I can study, I can be more proactive in learning and to addressing the problems here. And I thought, this is a great resource for me to really to learn that information and to really to learn, you know, what the needs are here. So that's kind of why I'm here and everything. I thank you, and I'd like to come maybe, you know, a few more times, you know, just to come and just to listen to the board and to learn how to deal, and it helps me to kind of explain some of the laws, rules, and regulations that you guys adopt when I encounter various people and they ask me questions. Well, why this, that, or that, and then I can address that in a professional way and say, well, look, this is what they talked about, and this is what, you know, the agenda, you know, is, and this is the reason why. And a lot of times then they're more, you know, and then I have the time more to explain things to them. Mm-hmm. And so I'm independent. It's just me. I don't have a crew. I'm semi-retired. And so I'm just kind of doing this because I still love it to do it. My wife wants me to retire, but I want to keep doing it because I really love it. So anyway, thank you for your time.
Well Leon, yeah. I'll say from this end, we appreciate you coming. Ah. I always appreciate seeing some other faces, some public faces, and especially those that are not upset with us, you know, at the same time. So it's nice to see a friendly face out there.
And that's why I thought it you know, as an independent, just totally separate from the board,
yeah.
you know, for me to learn, and especially, and not only do I have one talk, but I also have an opportunity for maybe another talk. There's another nursery that's talking to me about. And so what I'd like to do maybe, you know, Justin, is maybe get some charts and things after we're done that I can have available in brochures, or what the county would like to give me that I can have available to, if I do, when I give these talks, to give to, you know, homeowners, landowners, and everything, that they have, give that, make that available, you mm-hmm. know, to them. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times they won't come down here. They won't spend the time, you know, mm-hmm. to come down here to seek it on their own. But if you give a talk and you have it available to them, if they want it, then many times they will take it. And then the more that they know and they learn about what, you know, some of the things are, you know, then they could ask me questions. Well, what's on my list or not? Mm-hmm. And so I can just talk to them and tell them. Yep. And I'll probably get 30-some minutes or so, I'm uh-huh. guessing. Yeah. So that's, you know.
Good. Too bad you didn't live in District 2.
Yeah.
Yeah? I live in Battleground. I'm
District 33.
I'm right off of 503 and
above Louisville
in Park. 179th, right by the Brush Prairie turn off there in the north. So that you know where the old nursery used to be, the
yeah.
Brook Field.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I live in that development. Mm-hmm. They got rid of the nursery and they built a whole bunch of homes in there. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm right in there. I'm right there. Mm-hmm. I'm right on the. I'm in the city of Battleground, but barely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. And I just moved there about. I've been here about a year and a half. From Colorado, and we moved here because of family. We had no family in Colorado. Mm. We have more family here in this area, so I'm okay. learning about this whole thing. We were in Colorado 23 years, and so we're new right. here. So we anyway, do. It's a little bit about yeah. myself. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you. Good Thanks. Luck with all that, and appreciate you coming by. And feel free to come by on the.
Okay. You bet.
You've got the meeting date, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like to come by.
So
you know,
no problem there, because it is. Open public meeting.
Yeah,
for
yeah.
one, but you're welcome to sit. Yeah, yeah. So appreciate it.
I was going to report on when I went to the American Farm Bureau Federation meeting in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. We went to a tour. We went on. We went to the Monsanto factory in Lulling, Louisiana, mm-hmm. and where they produce virtually all of the Roundup.
And you're not falling apart.
No, I'm not falling apart and everything. Anyhow, it was real interesting on how they produced it. Now, one of the funny things was they had a big screen up and they showed the process they go through to produce it. And they said, please, no pictures. Well, right away, one of the girls, you know, young girls was there. She pulls her camera out, and they're going, pull it, you know, and stuff. Is no, that's proprietary, you know, information, and do not take pictures and stuff. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting. They had a product for us as we were leaving that they gave every one of us. And so Joe got a deal. I got one, and Sadie, his wife, got one. Have you ever seen it? It's a Roundup in a gel. And it looks just like a oversized deodorant wipe deal. And you just take it and you click it out and you wipe it on the leaf of the plant you want to kill. And they said, you know, it's great. It will not, you know, of course it doesn't. You don't spray it, so you don't get it on any other plants and everything. Now, Sadie lost hers because they took it away from her in the airport.
Oh,
but,
no.
But Joe and I got ours home and stuff. So I haven't tried it yet, but... Going to be interested, and I don't know if it's something you would use. I've never seen it. Yeah.
You can do that with any chemical. It's called the touch method.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
You just take yeah. a, you know, like one of those foam
paint brushes,
yeah, and you have yeah. a little container. That's another thing I tell people, because a lot of people, they don't want to spray anything in their garden, and so I teach them. It's like, well, you don't have to spray. You just take the thing and you just barely touch the leaves and things, and you can kill things without. And so
yeah.
I teach people that type thing.
Yeah,
we've done that sometimes.
I wish it worked that well on Himalayan blackberries. But anyhow, so the other side of it was that amazed us was the next product they're working on is Banvel, and you know we were kind of saying is well you know Banvel has a problem with drift in volatilization, and they go, that's the deal, is they have a new product that will not volatilize.
Mm-hmm. So, Banville?
Yeah.
Banville, okay.
Yeah, dicamba.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that a liquid? I use it as a granule.
Oh, really?
I've used it as a
liquid. I got right at my last bucket. I gave it away.
I've always used it as a liquid.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the other part of weed mass.
Yeah, weed mass are the two halves, yeah.
Yeah. When it was developed, Banville.
I'm sure it was Banville. I had a 5-gallon bucket of it.
Mm-hmm. Really? I don't remember.
They also have a thicker that you can
It'd be over 20 it, years ago.
Make the water thicker.
Well, I know. They've got a lot of things, but volatilization won't stay with the sticker. So, yeah. Yeah.
One thing I'll throw out for thought, it comes along the line of spraying, is I'm a hunter, and Weyerhaeuser does a lot of spraying up there. Real big controversy now because the elk are starting to limp, and they're all dying off, or they're shooting them. That's it, they die. They in our place for the last 5 years, and we got about 30 head now, and over half of them are limping.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know they've had quite a time with the hoof rot, yeah, in the elk.
It's hoof disease.
Oh, it's hoof disease.
Is what they call it.
Yeah.
The deal is, every time they give somebody to take control of it, they learn something the first year or so, and then they go somewhere else. They bring something new in. Mm-hmm. And they haven't got anywhere.
Hmm.
There was a meeting in Battleground, I think last Monday night. I couldn't make it. I think they got a grant, University of Washington, two people from Seattle came down, didn't know anything. Didn't even know what Weyerhaeuser was.
Hmm. So what's Weyerhaeuser spraying? Do you know, Randy?
It's pretty potent. I know they had a big meeting in Kelso a year and a half ago, and you know, the game department says it's not the spray, and they had some people up there. Well, who are you getting paid by? This one woman, she wouldn't say. Mm-hmm. Finally, somebody knew. They got on the computer. Hmm. She was working for one of the chemical companies,
mm-hmm,
but she was supposed to be up there,
yeah,
you know, nonpartisan.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, but, another thing, just to let you know that one of my endorsements is agriculture. So I have an ag endorsement, so I spray. I have experience in Colorado to spray a lot of horse properties. I've done thousands of horse properties, and to do that here. And also I have roadside and turf. So those are the three things that I have endorsements for by the Washington State of Ag.
Is Lagler organic?
No.
Mm-hmm.
No.
I got a friend down at the coast, he's organic, and organic, you gotta have special sprays. You still can use chemicals, but it's gotta be certain ones.
Oh yeah, certain things, yeah.
But they don't work that well.
No. Yep. Yeah, that's like the vinegar is
vinegar.
Geez, you know, they were at the Hort conference. They were talking about using vinegar.
My daughter-in-law.
If you want to know, I won't tell you. I won't take your time now. But I did a lot of research about that because in Colorado, I had a customer that wanted organic, and they talked about vinegar. And I did. I talked to some of the weed scientists in Colorado. And I found out about it, so I can tell you all about what it does.
Mm-hmm.
But just in short, it destroys your soil and all the microbe activity, and it doesn't kill them; it burns it all down.
The vast amount you got to use per acre. My gosh.
Yeah.
I had a guy tell me to use the vinegar on holly. That it'll cut the grease.
Oh, really?
Huh. Holly's real greasy, and you can't get nothing to go in. And
I've got patches of holly showing up after you guys started talking about holly.
Yeah,
and then now I'm going out there going, shoot.
I got a lot of holly.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, I'm going to go ahead and adjourn the meeting
so
Chris can quit taking minutes on all this stuff that we're just...